How many of you have studied very much the history of Christmas? This is a Christmas season, you know. How many of you have studied? All right. There's a lot of negative and a lot of positive stuff in it. All right. A lot of negative. That, and, of course, Santa Claus and Christmas and all this kind of stuff. All right. In Northern Europe, they had a drunken brawl on December, basically from about December 20th to January. They absolutely had a drunken brawl. The Northern Europeans, the Danish, the Swedes, the Germans, all up there, they would go and kill all of their livestock. And they would have one feast after another. They killed all of their livestock except for the broodstock. They'd kill them all, and they would eat and drink and just absolutely just lay out in a drunken brawl for about 2 weeks during that time of the year. Many of those people were converted to Catholicism later, and they still wanted to celebrate that. So the Catholic Church adopted that about that period of time. What? Well, the Catholic Church, around 600 or 700 A.D., is when they a lot of these people were converted, and they basically took some of these Christmas celebrations in. Okay, we're in the. It was an evolution of things. Now your Jehovah Witnesses and your Seventh-day Adventists and all of them really beat heavy. They say there's nothing about Christ in Christmas at all. Well, Christmas is Christ Mass. There, where we get the name Christmas, is Christ Mass. That came right out of Catholicism, doesn't it? Christ Mass. A Mass for Christ, all right? Now, Jesus was probably born in the fall. Now, I almost showed that picture today. Remember the Star of Bethlehem, how that all came about? And you remember that last year? But we've seen that. What?
That was a cool video.
Yeah, pretty cool video. All right. Now, in England, celebrating Christmas after when the Puritans came up, you know, in the 1500s, because of the bad influence of those Northern Europeans on the rest of society with their Christmas ball, with basically their drunken brawls. The Puritans did not want to celebrate Christmas and some parts of the Church of England. Of course, the Catholics always celebrated Christmas, Christ Mass. That's where we get that, okay? Now, it was against the law in early America to celebrate Christmas. Did you know that? Anybody know that? In early America, it was against the law to celebrate Christmas because of the Puritans' heavy influence. Every state in early, every colony in America was a church state. There was no freedom of religion in America at all, period, in early America. There was no freedom of religion. If you were in one state or one colony, whatever that state church was there, you were taxed a tithe, and it went to the church. You supported. If you were to get married, you had to be married in that church, and you had to get a license to be married in that church. And of course, early Baptists would not have anything to do with that because they weren't going to get a license to get married. They thought that was church and state. It finds out in the last days the church and state will become one again. So, and that we see that today because of the moral issue, all right, with the parties that we have today. The church and the state are coming, but close to becoming one, and they will be in the end times. Of course, the church and state will be one, which we call the mother of harlots, okay? Now, in 1870 in America, they decided to have Christmas as a holiday by 1870, okay? That's when it started, 1870. Now, in the Civil War, the South would not celebrate, or the South would celebrate Christmas and the North wouldn't. I couldn't remember which one it is now. I was going to print all this stuff out, but my computer won't get along with my printer. so I can hand some little things out. It's got a brand new one, and it doesn't. It wants me to buy all new equipment. It won't want. Doesn't want to use any of my old equipment. I think Bill Gates got something to do with that. Yeah, I'm sure. Anyway, I couldn't print it out, so I could have all this printed out for you, but it wouldn't work. I tried to get it to print. I couldn't type it in there, but it wouldn't print. All right. In World War I, of course, in Europe, they were celebrating Christmas a lot, especially in Germany. See, Germany is Northern Europe, you know, that part of it. They were celebrating Christmas, and they had Christmas trees. And in World War I, during the Christmas season, they were in the trenches in Europe, and the Germans and the Americans and the English were all out there. And during the battle, and they were both in the trenches, the Germans started singing Christmas hymns, Christmas songs in German, and waving branches of evergreen trees with candles on them. You know, they didn't have electric lights much back then. And so anyway, they would put candles on the trees, and they would light them. When I was a little kid, they used to have little electric candles on there, and they had bubbles in them. Remember those a long time ago? You don't see them anymore, but they would be bubbling and light and look like a candle on a tree. What? Yeah, they were about that long, yeah. Anyway, you'd see those things, and I'd see them in the Christmas stores and everything during Christmas at that time. Now, Washington Irving wrote a poem, I think it was about 1809, and he started trying to get Christmas going. And 1841, a storage manager invented Kris Kringle, the Santa Claus type figure. Okay? And most of this was, it always was commercial, I want you to know. Christmas has always been commercial.
Who invented Kris Kringle?
Kris Kringle, basically a apartment store manager. All right, an department store manager. Okay, department store manager, and that was 1841. In 1931, Coca-Cola invented some pictures of Santa Claus and different things. And in 1931, in 1939, Montgomery Ward's invented Rudolph.
There we go.
All right. And then, of course, you know, Gene Autry, I believe it was, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, the song. Okay. And that was probably about 1939 or 40. By 1920, they had started having Santa Claus as a overweight, red-suited guy with a beard and long hair and all this kind of stuff and everything. Santa Claus. Now, we're going to go back to St. Nicholas. St. Nicholas. Okay? St. Nicholas was a Catholic preacher. Okay? This is about the middle of the 4th century. Okay? Now, the story about giving presents and things, now, he was very rich. He was from a rich family. His mother and father died, and this guy named Nicholas, he was basically gave his life to the Lord, preaching and going around ministering to the poor, mainly. And this guy had three daughters. Now, back in those days, how many of you have heard this story? Anybody? All right, this guy in this church had three daughters. Well, he couldn't afford a dowry for those three daughters. Back in those days, if you had a daughter, if you were going to marry her off, you had to have money to give to her as a dowry, or nobody's going to buy her.
Amen.
Hey, no, they're going to buy it. They're not going to buy this deal, you know. So anyway, he's decided to sell his daughters into prostitution. He's going to make prostitutes out of them.
What?
He's going to get some money some way or another, you know. That's what. This is true. This is a true story, okay?
That's when the Ranger game started.
Now, this is the true story, okay? This isn't baloney. This is a true story. You can study this in history. This, you can go and get the Way of the Saints. See this? I have all kinds of books. I had the Catholic Encyclopedia and all that. This is the Way of the Saints. It'll tell you that right there in the Way of the Saints, too. Okay? So I'm telling you some harebrained tale. All right?
The Catholic didn't number on it, didn't
he? Well, anyway, Nicholas, he had a lot of money. So he took and in the middle of the winter time, and this girl, you know, he was about ready to sell these girls into, one of them was old, they were all different ages, you know, one of them was coming of age, so he was about to sell this one into slavery or prostitution. So this Bishop Nicholas, he goes by and he throws in an open window, he throws in a bag of gold. So, aha! This guy said, well, now, man, this must be an answer from God or something. Now I can marry my daughter off. She was probably 13 or 14 years old, you know. Anyway, he said, man, I can marry my daughter off. So he has a dowry for the girl and he marries her off. Well, the other one comes of age and he's going to sell her into prostitution. So the old Nicholas, he goes by again and throws another bag of gold in the window. And so he marries her off. He has a dowry for her. Finally, the other one comes with that. Now, this is the true story, okay? Now, you may think that this sounds pretty wild, but this is... Well, I tell you what, there are some kids you'd pay to get rid of. I'm telling you. All right. Yeah, oh, okay. Now, the last girl. So old Nicholas, he goes by and when she comes of age, he throws in a bag of gold into the window and he marries all the three daughters off. So, and in the meanwhile, he is to get little kids that are poor and everything else, he's giving them gifts and things on their birthdays and all different kinds of stuff. This is where we get, and the Catholic Church, wasn't very long after his death, I believe, that they canonized him into a saint. Now what is a saint? Saint Nick. You heard of that?
Yeah.
Old Saint Nick. Okay? Well, St. Nicholas, the way the Catholic Church, every one of us are sinners, aren't we? Okay, we're all sinners. We sin after we're saved. Even. It's not enjoyable after you're saved. You're not going to enjoy sinning very much because you're going to feel the conviction of the Holy Spirit. Not only that, you're going to feel His belt across your backside when you sin, because you're His child, so He'll warp you according to the book of Hebrews, you know. You ever been warped by God? Yeah. We get warped by God a little bit now and then. It's good for us. Well, anyway, the Catholic Church said, well, there are some people that live so far above sin and goodness that they get their, and of course, you know, Catholicism, they believe in working your way to heaven. They believe in working your way to heaven. Huh?
Sounds like edible
burden. Yeah. Well, this is basically humanism. The humanistic idea. You know why the Muslim religion is so absolutely so acceptable by most of the world?
Because they're afraid to die.
Huh?
Because they're afraid
to kill them. No. No, no, no. Listen to what I said. Okay? Why is the Muslim religion so acceptable to most of the world? Because it is a humanistic religion. In the Muslim religion, you are not responsible for Adam's sin. You're only responsible for your own sins. And all you have to do is you have to do enough good deeds in this world that in the end, that your good deeds will outweigh your bad deeds. Well, what difference is that between Catholicism? Well, Catholicism...
That's legalism.
That's right. It is humanism is what it is. So now, let me go on now so I don't lose track of where I'm going. My brains haven't quite got all together. Last week I was just barely here. This week I'm here a little better. So the Catholic Church says some people are really, really, really good. So we're going to make these people saints. And so then you pray to St. Nicholas or whatever. Well, St. Nicholas and the Christopher and all this, you know, the Christopher medals and all this kind of stuff, protection and everything. Well, see, here's the whole thing about St. Nicholas. All right? And the two St. Nicholases that are two saints that are St. Nicholases in the Catholic Church. Both of them are saints that are going to watch over you. They're so good that up in heaven that they're like angels and they can look down here and they protect you. So you pray to them to protect you. Okay? You pray to them to protect you. Now that is ungodly and it's paganism, isn't it? Period. It's just flat paganism. But paganism came into the Catholic Church because in pagan religion, they always have an idol to kiss, don't they? Some kind of a good luck charm. So in Catholicism, they had plenty of good luck charms, plenty of idols, all this kind of stuff, so they just adopted it into the Catholic Church. So we have St. Nicholas. All right? We have St. Nicholas. Yes.
In the Muslim religion, the only way a woman can go to heaven is if her husband allows.
Well, a woman, just like Mormonism. Mormonism is a lot like... In Mormonism, women don't have souls. In Mormonism, women don't have souls like men. In Mormonism, men are little gods. In the Worldwide Church of God, Herbert Armstrong, men are gods. What do you think they got all this humanistic ideas? And a woman is only in heaven for pleasure. Mormons, if you like your wife, you got in this, what you call a celestial marriage. She has a new name, and you have a new name. And they put a veil over her face in the grave when she's buried. And if she pleased her husband in this world, in this life, he can resurrect her. Otherwise, she's going to stay in the ground. All right? Now, that's why Mormon girls... They'll marry a Gentile, but I'm going to tell you something. They're not going to leave that guy a Gentile. They're going to bawl and squall because they don't think they're going to get into heaven unless that man resurrects them. Women in the Muslim religion are objects of pleasure. Okay? In most of the world even today, women don't have many rights. Did you know that? Most of the world, in the biggest part of the world, women don't have much right. In China, if you're a little girl going to be born, you may get aborted. Matter of fact, they're running out of girls over there. They're having to import women for their men. They want to have a man to carry on the family. So they abort all the girls. If they find out the woman's pregnant with a girl, they'll abort them. Because the man wants a boy heir, okay? Like an heir. Yes, brother. Yes. They're still limiting how many children they can have. Well, anyway, in the world, women don't have much. They just don't have much, except in America. But there has been some very negative influence of America over the rest of the world with the female culture. A lot, women in America expect a lot, don't they? They expect a lot of their men to wait on them and to hold them up and all this kind of stuff. That's not going on anyplace else in the world, people, I'm telling you. It's not going on anyplace else in the world. And in America, a woman can divorce her husband and get her another one. In many parts of the world, if a woman gets divorced, she's done for. Nobody else is going to want her. Period. In America, they just go from man to man. That has influenced a lot of the world. Now, that's not good. I'm telling you, that's not good. It's going from man to man to man to man. Not for women and not for men. It's not good, is it?
I don't know, Jim.
People will go. I have known people. I have known men that might have been married a couple of times, and they go over there and they will marry them a... They will go to... Paula, they will go someplace to Japan. They will go. Well, we find out the Japanese women now are acting like American women. Okay. They will go down to the Philippines, in Mexico, Korea, someplace, and marry someone. But then when they get over here in 2 or 3 years, they're acting like Americans. All right. Hanukkah. Now let's go into another stage of Christmas. Now most of the Christmas that we have today does not come from paganism. Did you know that? Believe it or not. It does not come from paganism. Where does it come from? I showed you at the beginning of the class, before the class, I turned on a movie here about Hanukkah. Okay? Now, a few hundred years before Christ, there was a guy that came on the scene, and by the way, the book of Daniel prophesied all of this. Okay? We studied the book of Daniel last week. Who was the bad guy that came into Jerusalem and butchered and offered as a sacrifice pigs on the altar in Jerusalem? Who was it? Anybody remember his name? Come on. Come on. Somebody's got to remember his name. Antiochus what? Antiochus Epiphanes. Okay. Antiochus Epiphanes. Well, Antiochus Epiphanes went in there and desecrated the temple. And finally, in the Maccabees, if you read 1st and 2nd Maccabees, you will read the history of the revolt of Israel. They weren't going to take any more of this from Antiochus Epiphanes, and they revolted, and they finally won. Well, when they got the temple back, and they consecrated the temple, they didn't have any consecrated olive oil. No consecrated olive oil. They didn't have enough consecrated olive oil. But they had just enough to enough consecrated olive oil to put in the menorah. And every day they would pray that the lights would stay lit to reconstitute it for 8 days. Okay? So for 8 days they prayed real hard, and this was the miracle of Hanukkah. They would pray that candle would stay lit in the temple, in the holy place. Okay, in the holy place. So they prayed, and that every day God would keep the lights burning. For 8 days it was a miracle. And that's called the Feast of what? It's called the Feast of Hanukkah, but it's also, what is the biblical name for it? Oh, that's another deal with it. Had Saturn and all that had to do with the pagan Christmas.
I just read that, Jim, too.
Okay. All right. Right. I forgot what I was saying. Must be getting low blood sugar.
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah.
The other name for it.
Okay. The other name for it, the biblical name for Hanukkah. Nobody remembers? Jesus celebrated Hanukkah. Did you know that?
Passover?
No. The Feast of Lights. The Feast of Lights. We're talking about the lights. The Feast of Lights. Okay? He celebrated the Feast of Lights. He went to Jerusalem for the Feast of Lights. Okay? That was Hanukkah. They were celebrating how that Israel took back their land and they reconsecrated the temple. Now, on the Feast of Hanukkah, they would do some things that are very related to Christmas today. Okay? What was it? What do they do on Hanukkah? What do they do during the Feast of Lights on Hanukkah?
So
Lord,
I guess.
No. They light candles. They light one candle for each day. That's the menorah. All right. And they have an eight branch. Now there was a seventh branch menorah in the temple, wasn't it? But they've got eight standing for the 8 days on this one, okay? So they light one candle for 8 days. They light it off of the center candle, which is the Messiah candle. And they light it for 8 days, okay? Now they go and light it, and what else do they do? This is what they call the 8 days of Hanukkah. What? They have certain kinds of food that they have. They have a big feast. They have a feast for 8 days. Okay? A feast for 8 days. Now, how many of you have Christmas dinners? That's where that comes from. And the kind of things that they had was the kind of foods that you have on Christmas dinners. Basically, except for the hams, you know. No Jews are going to eat ham, unless it's kosher ham.
Yeah.
Okay. Turkey ham. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway.
Turkey ham.
Turkey ham. Well, where's turkey ham? Tastes like ham and turkey. All right. What else do they do on the 8 days? Anybody know?
They drink wine, I know, for some reason.
Well, they all drank wine. They drank wine. Yenamata saison bleu, oinos, okay. They have their wine. They drink it on their tables and everything, you know, whatever. That fruitfulness, what? That's it. You got an A-plus today, Brett. They exchange a gift. They exchange gifts. But they get 8 gifts. The kids get 8 gifts. Okay, they get 8 gifts. They open up a gift every day. All right? All right. They have 8 gifts. What else do they do in Hanukkah? That they pray. They pray all, you know, they have prayers that they pray on the days of Hanukkah. All right. What else did they do that relates? What? We were talking about eating marijuana.
They break the unleavened bread.
No, that hasn't got anything to do with Hanukkah.
Did they sing?
They sang songs. They sang songs. They sang songs, and they sang songs how God had blessed them and called them out and all of this. Now we have Christmas carols somewhere. And they would go around singing from doorway to doorway to doorway all through that period of time. All right? All through that period of time, they would go about singing. All right? Is that pretty good now? Now, do you see, now where we get Christmas today, how we celebrate Christmas today, does not come from paganism. Santa Claus comes from the Catholic Church, and Saint Nicholas, whatever, the patron saint, and how he got his name and his fame was from doing what? Rescuing 3 girls from prostitutes. From prostitutes.
Was he a Roman or Saint Nicholas?
Well, there were 2 Saint Nicholases, you have to remember. All right? This one here, he also was in the Council of Nicaea. Did you know that? Saint Nicholas was in the Council of Nicaea, and he argued for the Trinity, by the way, of all that.
That would be German, wouldn't it, Nicholas?
Well, no, Nicholas wasn't. St. Nicholas, the Germans and the Northern Europeans had St. Nicholas. They worshipped St. Nick. And they called him Santa Claus or Kris Kringle. All right? Remember, in 1841, a store manager in America brought up and he put Kris Kringle and had decorated windows in his store. Okay? That came from Kris Kringle. Kris Kringle, basically, if you trace it back, goes back to Santa Claus. All right? Let me read you a little bit. All right. Basically, 350 A.D. is when he lived. All right? Says, what is truly remarkable about St. Nicholas is how famous he has become, considering so little is known about the man. He was a bishop of Myrna in Asia Minor. Okay, there's where he came from. Was imprisoned for his faith during the persecution of Emperor Diocletian. Was present at the Council of Nicaea and died in Myra, where he was buried in that cathedral. Later on, his bones were taken and put in a different place. They were arguing over his relics. Remember, I told you he was one of the holy guys, and they made a saint out of him. And then they'd worship him, and you could go pray to him, okay? All right. That is about the extent of the historical data, yet there are more depictions of Nicholas by Christian artists than any other saint. They drew a lot of pictures about him. There's all kinds of pictures about Nicholas. All right? Just all kinds. If you go on the encyclopedia, you'll see there were cookies and all kinds of things that they used to make in his honor, okay? Gobs and gobs of relics. All right? By Christian honors than any other saint, with the exception of Virgin Mary. And since we're on that subject, I'll see if I can find that little piece of detail in here I brought in for today. Here, it had a events in history that were very important. I think this is the Bakersfield, California. In 1854, Pope Pius IX proclaimed the Catholic dogma of the Immaculate Conception. In 1854. which holds that Mary, the mother of Jesus, was free of original sin from the moment of her conception. That's when the Virgin Mary, the Immaculate Conception, in other words, she was without sin. She was like the Messiah. She is a co-redeemer. In 1854, the Catholic Church did that. Okay? It was not, that was a very late Catholic dogma. Mariolatry actually began, the worship of Mary, actually, I believe it was in the, well, I think I have it down here. If I can find it. We'll talk a little bit about the evolution of Catholicism. I can find it here. Mariology began in the 500s. Around 500, Mariology began. Let me tell you a little bit about things that happened in Catholicism, okay? The evolution of Catholicism. As we're talking about St. Nicholas now. All right. Baptismal regeneration was started basically in an infant baptism in about 251 A.D., 250 to 300 A.D., that's when you have to realize now that Constantine the Great's going to come in the scene, and to be a member of the state, you're also a member of the church, so they began to baptize infants. When a child was born, he had how many days to be baptized so he could be a member of the church and the state, okay? All right, they began to persecute other Christians in the 300s. The Toleration Act in 311, Mariolatry in the 500s. Pope Leo the Second was officially established in the 500s. All right, indulgences were invented in the 600s. Purgatory was invented in the 700s. Saint and image worship was absolutely established in 787. A.D. We have the division of the Greek Orthodox and the Roman Catholic Church in 869. All right, we have in 1100s we have transubstantiation begun. Transubstantiation, what is that? Anybody know what that means? What? Transubstantiation, what is that? Remember that, Brother Rex? You know what transubstantiation is? What? When you have the Lord's Supper, the priest, he changes the wine into the blood of Jesus, literally, and the cracker, the wafer, into his body. So when you eat, if you don't believe that you're eating Christ and drinking his blood, then you have no salvation. That is absolute, and it was started in 1100. All right? Celibacy, the ungodly practice of the Catholic Church, was started in 1123 A.D. It was established. And from that time on, they've had child molesting and immorality in the Catholic Church. That's when it all began.
I don't think that was a gay man that came up with that idea.
All right. Confession was started in 1215. The Inquisition was started. The Inquisitions were started in 1231. The Bible was absolutely forbidden for any common man to own in 1229. Then you have Wycliffe and Huff and Huss and all of those people. We have Luther and Calvin come on the scene, and we start what we call the Protestant Reformation. They tried to reform the Catholic Church. All right?
Was that a law of them that you couldn't own the Bible?
That's right. They'd kill you if you had a piece of it. Actually, all the way back. For a long, long time. Now, let's go back to St. Nick now for a minute. Old Nicholas here, he was one of the solstice fathers. Santa Claus, Old Nick, Father Christmas, because of one story. A rich man in Myrna went bankrupt during Nicholas's tenure as bishop and having three daughters. All right? He had no money for dowries and was despaired of ever marrying them. And incredibly, now later in other stories that tell you that he was going to sell them as prostitutes. So Nicholas, He devised a way to save the girls. He tossed the bag of gold through their windows one night. Each one of them came of age. All right?
And what year is it again?
Well, he lived about 350. Okay? Now, there's another St. Nicholas of Tolentino. Okay? All right? Now, he would live from 1245 to 1305. And his birthday is celebrated on September the 10th. And St. Nicholas' birthday is celebrated on December the 6th. Okay? So you have all this stuff.
What's the name of that book again?
What?
The book.
Oh, the book of that, it's The Way of the Saints. It's a Catholic book. Bill.
I'm a little rabbit trail here.
You can look in the, if you go on and look under Santa Claus and study that in on the internet, it'll tell you about this same thing, so you don't have to go buy the book. Brother X. What? Santa Claus, this was something that went all the way back into Northern European. Saint Nick, Santa Claus, Kris Kringle, that all goes back. And it basically, they do the same thing that Saint Nick did.
Yeah.
All right.
That name is what reads me. Why is he called Santa?
Santa Claus?
Yeah.
Santa is saint.
No, but it's feminine, isn't it?
Well, Santa would be, yeah. What do you know about it, Brother X?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Uh-huh.
Santa is feminine, and cow sounds like a man.
Uh-huh. Santos would be man, Santa. Yeah. Santa Maria, okay. Santos, okay, boy or girl. You have to realize that the pagans also, they worshiped Mary. But it wasn't Mary. This is Nimrod's mother. This goes way, way back, according to Alexander Hislop. Way, way back. All right? The worship of the mother and the Madonna and child goes all the way back to Nimrod's time, which was way back here. Right there. There's where it goes back in time. Okay? On the chart. Any other?
You know, Jim, some religions believe that a Christmas tree is idolatry.
It is.
Yeah. And Joanne, now wait a minute.
Why
do you think wives can put it so simple and so easy? Because a friend of mine, I said, "Where's your Christmas tree, Dave?" And he said, "They're idolatry. I don't have one." So I'm explaining, all it is decorating with Jesus' birthday. And I'm telling Joanne, and her mind puts things so quick and so simple, she said, "Yeah, it would be if I fell down on my knees and worshipped it. And God gave me the brain to know the difference between decorations and life." And I thought, you know what? I wish I'd have thought and told Dave that, you know, hey, it would be if I fell down on my knees and worshipped it. But if you go to San Lin Ballpark 2 days after Christmas, you're going to find my idol sitting there at San Lin waiting to be thrown in jail. But she can put anything so simple, you know, to make it look so plain.
Okay, let me tell you a little bit more about this now. Hold on now. All right. Now, in 325 A.D., he attended the Council of Nicaea. This is Nicholas, okay? Now, he died December the 6th, 343, in Myra, okay? And was buried in this cathedral there where there was a relic called the manna formed from his grave. Now, this manna came out, and they would take this oil, and they would use this as healing powers for that. How many of you know anything about snake oil?
That's what
any
of those
use. Oh, no. Now, come off of it.
I know I got a lot.
Every time they always blame everything on Indians.
I got relatives that still sell in Alabama.
Snake oil. Yeah, well, now let's go back. This stuff goes way back yonder in history. Now, just let me tell you a few stories. This class is basically about Christmas and relics and all this kind of stuff and traditions and everything. Snake oil. Snake oil was supposed to cure all kinds of diseases and everything. How do you get snake oil? How do you get snake oil?
Magician.
Huh? What is snake oil?
You're a snake.
Thank you, Brother Rex. Somebody around here's got to know something about it. You know, he's an Indian. Some things only an Indian knows, you know. That's what they say.
Snake oil.
Snake oil, they would kill rattlesnakes, and some rattlesnakes are pretty fat. So they take the fat and they'd render the fat and they'd take this and they would use this snake oil, and we had white snake oil peddlers going around all over the place selling snake oil, and they'd usually get up there and play songs and entertain the people while they sell them their snake oil and basically a lot of different kind of herbs and things. They always got them from who? Indian remedies. Because you know what? The Indians were the greatest doctors in history. The Indians were the greatest pharmaceutical doctors in history, period. They had all kinds of stuff. Now let's go on. Let's talk about a little bit more of these type of things. All right? Snake oil. So we have snake oil. Now we go back to the mad stone. All this stuff that heals things, okay? Now this Nicholas, now he was a healer, and they said and they took relics, pieces of bone, and everything else. How many of you ever heard of a mad stone?
Yeah.
A mad stone. Now what is a mad stone, Brother X?
Well, according to the field I've heard, it's something in the brain or in the head of a white deer.
Well, now, a mad stone can come from any animal. They used to get some of them from white deer. There was one very famous mad stone in Europe that came from the Middle East. The Arabs, when you got snake bit, or when you got rabid dog bit by a rabid dog or skunk or squirrel or something, you know, something bites you that was rabid, the only cure for it at one time was a mad stone. It was called a snake stone or mad stone. Now, this mad stone and snake stone would come from any animal. I have one. Mine came from a fish. They come from cattle. They come from dinosaurs. They find dinosaur skeletons and everything, and they find, like in an animal, there's sometimes a cyst or something. It's very porous. And sometimes from dinosaur gizzards, some of them had gizzards. And in the gizzards, they'd find a stone that was very porous. And they'd take, when you got bit by a spider, you got bit by a snake, or get bit by a dog, they'd stick this stone to it. Okay, now, so we're talking about legends and different kinds of things, okay? And it would stick to it. And they'd leave it on there until it fell off, and then they'd take it and they would boil it in what they call sweet milk. Okay? And they'd boil it in that, and poison would come out of it, and then they'd stick it back on the wound if it stuck to the wound, they'd go on. Now let me tell you a little story about my family with a mad stone, okay? My great 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 grandmother was Elakika Moshupchu, was her first name. She's Chickasaw Indians. And then they gave her a white name of Brown. And then she married a Scottish missionary by the name of A.G. McClure. Okay, and she had three children by him. In the meanwhile, they had adopted a white boy by the name of Smith Paul, which was my great-great-great-grandfather, okay? Well, Mr. McClure got bit by a rabid dog after they got to Indian Territory. A.G. McClure sent, there was only one way for a mad dog bite to get cured. My great-grandmother told me this story. They would send for a mad stone. Now, all the way, if you look up mad stones, we're talking about all kinds of legends today now. That's what history, Christmas is a legend, okay? If you look up mad stones in the internet, you'll see about the Lee Penny. The Lee Penny was a Persian origin. England was going back. We studied about, you know, the Christian crusades. They went into Europe and they back and forth. They pursued back and forth and they chased each other back and forth. Well, anyway, they had captured a Arab or Arabian Persian prince, and they asked, they were asking money for his return. Okay. So they brought this bunch of gold, so much they brought the gold, and the woman dumped out the bag of gold in front of the prince in England. And in that bag of gold was a stone, and she grabbed the stone and put it back in her pocket. And he said, "Leave that stone there. You're not going to get your son unless you leave the stone there." That became known as the Lee Penny.
A what?
The Lee Penny. You can look that up, the Lee Penny. They're even making facsimiles of that. My mad stone looks like the Lee Penny. Now let's get back to A.G. McClure in Indian Territory. They sent out, Smith Paul went out to look for a mad stone. They couldn't find a mad stone. They had moved the Chickasaws out of there, and almost every tribe had mad stones. And they used it for snake bites, for spider bites, for mad dog bites, all that kind of stuff. And they didn't have any other way. I mean, that was the only hope they had. And people would ride for hundreds of miles sometimes horseback. It just fast to get somebody that had a mad stone. Now, a mad stone, you could never sell it. You couldn't sell it. Now, they were worth as much as a whole farm or a herd of horses and cattle and everything else. They were worth a fortune. But you couldn't sell them. If you sold it, it said it would lose its power because it became a material thing. Smith Paul went looking for this mass stone. He couldn't find one. In the moving the Indians out of the Indian territory, they had out of Mississippi and Alabama and South Carolina, Georgia, all that. They lost a lot of their stuff on the Trail of Tears. So he came back, and Smith reported to Mr. McClure that they didn't find a mad stone. He said, "Well, I'm going to die." He said, "Very little hope that I'm going to live." He said, "Get a chain and a lock, and I want you to take me out there miles away from my home." And he said, "You can't bury me." He said, "We have to burn me up. I have to be burned up to ashes. Because if an animal gets me, they will get rabies." So they got out there while he was still conscious and everything. They put a big pile of brush out there. And then he had Smith Paul, he had him take him and put a chain around his neck. Acklin McClure put the chain around his neck and locked the chain where he couldn't get loose. He tied him to a tree where he couldn't get loose. He made a pallet down out there, and he told him, "Now when I get real bad, don't let me suffer, shoot me." Now according to this historical thing, this really happened. Smith could not kill him, but he waited there until he died. Then he unlocked the chain, he put him up on the pile of brush and burned him up. But that's the history. When I was a little boy, if a dog came in the yard, you know, they were still mad dogs. Dogs still had rabies when I was young. And Grams, that was Smith Paul's granddaughter and Sam Paul's daughter, she would tell me the story about Mr. McClure and the mad stone. When I found a mad stone in a great big trout like this, I knew exactly what it was. It was in his body. A mad stone is some type of deformation. It's come like a type of a solid tumor, like a kidney stone or something, in any animal. One that they found, if you will read, a man, his cow dropped dead, so he had a veterinarian come over there, and he cut the cow open and did an autopsy on him because they didn't know what happened to this cow. The cow was a milk cow, and she was in good shape, and all of a sudden she fell over dead. They found a big stone in her heart. And when he took it out, it broke in two pieces. And they made cures with this. Now, this was a veterinarian and a doctor. You know, most veterinarians were doctors back then. So anyway, he said, "This is very valuable." He said, "You keep one, and I'll keep one." And people would ride, and they'd put these mad stones on each other. Well, these are relics, all right? Now, how many of you know what the early cure for leprosy was?
Prayer.
Maryland does.
Bullet in the heart.
Prayer.
Well, back in the Bible days, if you got healed of leprosy, they considered that a miracle of God. But the cultures, the Indians and different things, they had different ways. You know, we had snake oil. We talked about snake oil, catching rattlesnakes and taking and rendering the oil out of them and using that. That's what we call snake oil. And that's where we have the old snake oil doctors going around in early American towns and everything selling snake oil and all kinds of remedies and things. And most of them are all Indian remedies, okay? What's the remedy for curing leprosy? No. Now, maybe they did that, too. Okay, maybe they did that, too. Okay. But what you do is you can't. What is the most reviling creatures running around? If you come out there in my neighborhood, you'll see a lot of them right now.
Rats.
Huh?
Rats or
mouse? No.
Skunk?
No.
Snake?
No. What is the most repulsive creature around that eats nothing but dead stuff?
Oh,
buzzards. Buzzards. Vultures. I'm about 3 miles south of Vulture's Roost, okay? There's a lot of vultures that go out there. By the way, a California condor is a vulture. Did you know that? The California condor is a vulture.
Well, they shot him down.
Big vulture. Okay, now let me go on now. Only got a few more minutes here. Okay. The way you cured leprosy, these old relics and things like that, is you caught a buzzard. You caught a buzzard. Now, the way they used to catch buzzards, the Indians used to catch buzzards, is they would put out a fishing line on some dead meat, you know, rotten meat, and they put a fish hook in it. Okay? And the Indians had fish, did make fish hooks and stuff. I've got some Indian fish hooks at home. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the Indian fish hooks I've got. All right? You saw them, didn't you, Brother Rex? Anyway, they'd take the line and they'd put it out there and they'd put it in the meat. And when the vulture would go out there and eat the meat, he'd swallow the hook, and so they had him. So they take him down there. They'd take him and put him in a pot, and they'd seal the pot up, and they would boil this vulture and boil this vulture and boil this vulture and boil this vulture until it was all rendered down when it was nothing but the sauce in the bottom of it. And it would look like, they said, most of the time it would be green. And they'd drain off all the pot and take this green sauce. And then somebody that had leprosy, they would take this stuff in a cup, basically, and they dose it down him. They'd take a cup of lemon juice after that and put that down him. And then for dessert, they'd take a cup of sugar and put it down him.
Oh, you're so
cool. Well, you think about it, though. You know, buzzards, because of what they eat, they've got to have some of the best antibiotics in their body.
That's what they...
In the whole world.
Yeah. Now, that was a cure for leprosy. All right. Now, it tells about that in Rancho El Tijon. Okay? There's a book called Rancho El Tijon. Basically, Tony Araujo and all of these. I knew these people, by the way. They told the story of about a boy sitting. When anybody got leprosy, they'd go sit in the graveyard. In Jesus' time, if a person had leprosy, they'd say, unclean, unclean, unclean. Because they were damned to die.
Yeah.
A slow death. All right? So whenever a leper saw anybody, they say unclean. And that there was a movie about that gladiator, Spartacus. Was it Spartacus? That was that name of the movie where his mother and his sister became lepers and all that? And he, Ben-Hur. Okay, Ben-Hur. It talks about leprosy. But that was the way they cured leprosy back then. Now, in Israel, what was the offering when a leper was pretty poor, wasn't it? Wasn't a leper pretty poor? I mean, you're a leper, you're not going to be out working. Nobody's going to touch anything you're going to make or manufacture or anything. It's done and over with. I mean, your career is over with. If you got cured from leprosy, how did you get, what offering did you take to the priest? What?
Two turtle doves.
Now, this is a very beautiful picture of Jesus, too. First of all, they say only by a miracle of God would you ever get healed of leprosy. We find that in the Old Testament, we have Naaman, back in the Old Testament. And he went over to the prophet of God, and the prophet of God said, go out there and dip in the Jordan 7 times. He said, why should I go dip in the muddy Jordan? That's an unclean, dirty, muddy river. When I can go over in Damascus where there's clear waters and go drip and bathe in that stream. And then, you know, one of the prophet's kids, servants, he said, now if he'd asked you to do any kind of great feat, you would have done it. Or put anybody muddy. All he did was tell you to go out there and dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan. Baptize yourself 7 times in the Jordan. Okay? 7 is number what? Perfection. So he went out there, and when he came up the last time, he was clean. But what offering would he have made? The 2 turtle doves, even him. He was a great soldier, all right, from Syria. Well, when you would get cleansed of leprosy, you would take and bring 2 turtle doves. And they would take 1 turtle dove, and they would kill it. They would pull its head off, but they'd leave the skin, part of his skin, the neck of his skin, hanging on to him. They would hold his little body over a basin of running water. This water had to be what they call living water. Okay? It was caught in a basin from a stream or something. Okay? It had to be flowing water, living water. And they would drain this blood in there. And then they would take the other turtle dove, which represents us, and they would baptize him into that bloody water and then turn him loose and let him fly. Okay? That was the what we call the ceremony of cleansing or the offering for the leper. Well, there's a lot of legends in the world. Legends. Some of them are good and some of them are bad. The legend of Santa Claus basically comes from, and St. Nicholas and Kris Kringle and all that stuff comes from basically Nicholas. Thorndike. Nicholas also was supposed to give gifts to little poor children. He would give them candy and sweets and stuff like that because the little children were hungry and everything. He would go to the orphans and everything, and he'd give candy and bread and cheese and things to them. So we have, usually you have the candy canes and you have the, there was a thing here about the, about hanging up socks. Yeah, stockings. There was the legend of Nicholas when he went in and threw the bags of gold through the window. They would have out in front of the fireplace, they would have their socks and their shoes there to dry out. And one of the bags of gold, they say, would fall into a stocking. It would fall in a stocking in their shoe. So from that on, that's when they started hanging up the stockings by the fireplace to dry. So maybe they'd get a bag of gold in the stocking, okay? Just like that old man had that he was going to sell his daughters into prostitution. So there's where the hanging up the stockings came from. It was from Nicholas also, what they called Santos Nicholas or St. Nicholas, okay? All right, there's a lot of these things that go down and are handed to us from all over. Any other questions? Any questions? I hope you enjoyed this little bit of... by the way, did you learn something from Daniel last week? I don't hardly remember even showing you the video. I was so sick last week. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your prayers, too. I don't know what was wrong with me. Evidently, I didn't have the flu or anything. I don't know why I had the high fever all of a sudden. But I had it all last Saturday night, and I'm doing a little better today. Keep on praying for me. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. All right, who's going to do the prayer deal? Is that you, Brett?
Well, David, I'm going to ask
you. Okay, so you and David are going to share this one.
Yeah. I'm sharing.